From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, April 4th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa, Toyaksuk Nusum, Salama for joining the conversation. On today's show, the history and future of Yaith Kuwu Raven's Tail Weaving is an event happening on Tuesday, April 30th. Today, we'll speak to weavers and teachers Lily Hope and Ray Mills in an extended interview on this historic event. And this first Friday, Travis Clark Morris of Clark Handcrafted will have an event at Kindred Post showcasing his wood, furniture, and toys. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I sat down recently in studio with weavers and teachers Lily Hope and Ray Mills for a conversation about their work and backgrounds in weaving and a look at an upcoming special event on April 30th. On Tuesday, April 30th, 2024, an historic event will be taking place here on Tlingit Ani. It's called The History and Future of the Yaith Kuwu, Raven's Tail Weaving. It will be happening at Centennial Hall. It's an all-day affair, starting with a weaver's gathering, which is free and open to the public, and it will be followed that evening by a ticketed event presentation. It will all be presented by Lily Hope, weaver, mentor, and all-around advocate. Lily has been mentoring and working with over 20 weavers from across the country to create the largest known collection of child-size raven tail robes. I'm joined now by Lily Hope, as well as weaver, teacher, and researcher Ray Mills. Gunath Cheesh, Haye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasaiyati.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome. So this is a huge, huge event, Lily.
It is.
Yes. You have been working tirelessly, really, for a number of years now. And there's so many things that you have been doing. And it seems like this particular event might be somewhat of a culmination of a lot of things coming together. So will you tell us sort of how this event kind of came about?
In February of 2023, we launched the largest collection of Chilkat dancing blankets of a small size, you know, 3 feet and less. And my students at that time were like, well, now what? And we said, well, I guess we have to do the Raven's Tail version. So we've been working since last early March to put these robes together. Yes, mostly online, but some in Juno. And it made me realize that this history has never been told. Right. I mean, on the worldwide internet, if you search Raven's Tail Weaving, you can find some pieces historic in collections. You can find some, you know, YouTube videos that people have made. But this particular history and telling of where we are now and how we got here has never been shared on this scale.
And I think people might remember last year in 2023, the Chilkat robes were on display at the Juno Douglas City Museum for many months. They had kept extending it, and it was a really great thing. And you did have sort of a public presentation of the dancing of those robes as well. And that was like last spring, yeah?
It was. And the numbers at the museum, Juno Douglas City Museum, came almost to 30,000 visitors over that summer show.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's really awesome.
Okay, so let's talk about this just a little bit, because I think this is a piece that we need. Chilcat weaving, raven's tail weaving. What's the difference?
Raven's tail weaving predates the Chilcat dancing blankets by about 100 years. There was not a living teacher for raven's tail weaving. We'll get into that. And raven's tail textiles are black and white and sparing use of yellow, with patterns inspired by nature and pulled directly off of cedar and spruce root basketry. So they are very geometric, don't have faces and noses and claws in them usually, and they don't have cedar spun into the warps of the textiles historically. Chilcat weaving, in comparison, are defined by five-sided, bold black and yellow borders that kind of hold formline adapted designs in black, white, blue, and yellow. We did a little ratio comparison, and it's about 25% blue and yellow and 40-something percent black, and a just pop of white through a Chilcat blanket. In a raven's tail blanket, you're going like half white, half black, and teeny tiny pops of color.
And mostly yellow.
Right. Historically, mostly yellow, because that's what we had available to dye.
Right, right. And there's a great, I mean, you were part of the first season of a show that, or a series that we did here on KTOO. And it was a documentary about weaving and the history of that and working to find the dye colors and where that's all sourced from and how that happens. That's a whole other thing, right? In terms of foraging and doing all the things to get the dye colors.
Yes.
And so perhaps that the difference here between raven's tail and Chilcat is the origins of that, wherever people were doing it, they were basing what they could get in terms of the materials.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So when we see a historical robe or blanket, is it both? Sure. Can you call it both?
I use them interchangeably.
Interchangeably. Yes. Okay. Robe and blanket. And if you see something that has no blue in it, can you start to sort of Can I detective my way into getting that it might be a raven's tail if it doesn't, because you said it has certain kinds of shapes, right?
If you see no blue in an older textile from the Northwest Coast and the patterns are more geometric, you know, angular or boxy,
yeah,
you could start to say, this might be a raven's tail.
Interesting. Okay. Because I know I could go to the museum and they'll tell me.
Sure.
But also, as you know, somebody listening might be like, I want to figure out like how to, when I see a picture of it, can I discern what it is?
Right.
The other difference I'm thinking of is a raven's tail piece is traditionally woven from the left to right. You're ending with fringe. You have white fringe on either end, whereas Chilcat is woven in smaller kind of sections, mm-hmm. Wording that correctly. And it doesn't have the same fringe that a raven's tail piece would. So those are another couple kind of indicators.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Whereas, mm-hmm. And the Chilcat, kind of those sections are form line shapes that are woven into the piece.
Okay.
And raven's tail doesn't traditionally contain those form line designs. That's where the geometric patterns of our, that were created by our ancestors and are really just magical to see, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you mentioned something that I want to also clarify, which is Northwest, right? So raven's tail and Chilcat aren't necessarily just here, right? It's sort of a whole Northwest, different tribes, clans, people, indigenous people from around the Northwest. Ideas or shapes or ways of weaving were sort of traveling through those areas. Is that right?
Yes, I would say Vancouver, British Columbia, and First Nation peoples in British Columbia, Whitehorse, over into southern Alaska, right? Down into Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, up north into Haines, that the research is showing that these two textiles, both Chilcat and Raven's Tail, originated on the northwest coast of Alaska and Canada. So native peoples in Alaska and native peoples in Canada.
Oh, that's great. That is so cool. Mm-hmm. And there's just, and that's, I think, something that is, this event is going to be helpful with, right? Because you're calling it the history and future of. Great. And so when we're thinking about the history, I'm just trying to get that context, right, in terms of where it comes from, how it started, what the difference is between Raven's Tail and Chilkat weaving might be, which is fantastic. So let's talk about this event just a little bit, just so we can set the scene. I'm talking with Lily Hope and Ray Mills about this wonderful event called The History and Future of Yaith Kuwu, which is happening on April 30th. So tell us, what is going to be happening on April 30th?
The day begins with a weaver's gathering, probably 40 artists in the lobbies of Centennial Hall here in Juneau. 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., free and open to the public. We'll have tables set up, huge looms set up, the Zach Gordon Youth Center Weaving Our Pride Raven's Tail Robe will be present. You are invited to come and touch, with permission, the works in progress. Ask us all the things. Bring your students. If you're a teacher in the district, walk your students over from Harborview or Juneau Community Charter School and check it out, what we're doing.
Yeah. And then, and so that's going to be during the day from 11 to 3. And that's going to be, it's like you said, open to the public. And anybody is welcome to come and check that out. I love that you can actually maybe get a little hands-on, Ray, right? You can like see how it's, will people be working that day or?
Oh, yes. We'll be in panic mode.
Everyone will be working.
Oh, yes. We're going to be putting on cones and spiraling fur and panicking about having the fringe finished and all the things for the evening event.
Yes. And the evening event is a ticketed event, and those tickets are available at jahc.org. And for more information about the event overall, you can go to lilyhope.com, lilyhope.com. Make sure you put a www.lilyhope.com. in that URL. So what's going to be happening during the evening?
We're going to share a multimedia event of the history telling that's not been told. We're going to honor the researcher, Cheryl Samuel, who woke this art form up in the mid-80s, and students that she taught early on, one of them, Kay Parker, who has been carrying this work with integrity, teaching for 40 years. Is it 40 years? Kay has recently retired from teaching this art form at the university and is really excited to focus on her own art making full time. And there are a series of Native teachers right now who are sharing this knowledge through the university, through Native foundations. And we want to honor this this lineage of waking up the art form, holding it with such care. And where are we going next? We're going to have Josh Jackson's Tlingit Culture Language Literacy, TCLL. His K-1 students are going to dance newly finished works from 20 plus of my students and other mentor artists. It's going to be the cutest thing you've seen since I don't know what else was cute.
And
since
probably the cute.
Oh my God. Baby
since
robes,
last year, yes. Yeah.
These new works are going to dance and, you know, it'll be high energy and enthusiastic. And I'm just smiling, like my face is already hurting thinking about these beings coming to life and taking their first steps together. And then at the end of the evening, when we think it's all over, the audience and people watching online might get a little emotional. It's a top secret thing that's going to happen that might make the hairs on your arm stand up. And
secrets.
I hope you can be here.
I love secrets. So something that we can't reveal. And so that might be a nice little surprise for folks who show up. I mean, it's enough of a surprise to see the TCLL kids in the robes and dancing. And that's going to be so adorable. But yeah, you're just going to want to be there for this event, it sounds like. So this is all taking place at Centennial Hall. And it's on April 30th. So I also wanted to talk with you both about your journey through weaving. Let's start with you, Ray. So how long have you been weaving?
It has been almost exactly 3 years. I just saw a memory pop up of my mask, and I had just put the cute little nose in there. So a few years ago, I reached out to Lily because I have dreamed my entire life of being a weaver. I remember being a kid and thinking I could do that. And it just didn't happen. You know, there was always an excuse that I had made or, you know, something had come up. And 3 years ago, I messaged Lily and said, I really want to do this. How do I move forward? And I remember a response saying, well, this isn't exactly a beginner project, but if you think you can keep up, like, I will get you a kit. And I basically just hit the ground running. My first project was the Chilcat Protector Mask and has been traveling for the last, well, almost 3 years with the
Protection, Adaptation, and Resistance that was launched through Bunnell Street Arts up in Homer.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, so that's been traveling to all of these museums. It's actually better traveled than I am in the last 3 years. But it will be back and in the museum here, the State Museum, this summer. And I'm really excited to have it back home and be able to visit my first weaving and everyone else's beautiful creations that were put into that show as well.
Oh, that's amazing. And where did you grow up?
So I was born in Sitka, raised in Cake. So Juneau's the big city for me. But I've been living here now again for 12 years, maybe. I love Southeast. It's definitely home. And I love that we have this community. And now that I'm weaving and have an even bigger support group, it's just, I get emotional thinking about it because I've never felt so at home doing something.
Wow.
Once I started my Chilcat piece, I knew that that's what I was supposed to be doing. My next project ended up being, I started a couple leggings, got about halfway done and had the opportunity to take a class from Kay Parker at UAS and decided to make a Ravenstail curved apron, which isn't normally like your second or third project, but I'm
ambitious.
Ambitious, let's put it that way.
Fearless, a little bit fearless.
I love that.
Just
I love
do it.
That.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working full time still, and it took longer than I had probably wanted, but I'm still extremely proud of that. And it just, I haven't stopped weaving since.
And when you were growing up in Sitka and then Cake, and you said you saw it, were you seeing it in just around your where you were in your town?
Yeah. So I grew up coming up to Juneau for celebration. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there's always just beautiful regalia for that. There's also a few weavers that are from Cake. So I did see it, you know, and I remember my mom and dad taking classes. I grew up around these art forms. I would go and harvest with them. Dolores Churchill was one of the ones that would come and I remember teaching. We would go and harvest spruce roots. We'd go and harvest cedar bark. I'd help process these things. So even though I wasn't already, you know, intending on doing this, it was part of my childhood and part of that culture, just helping each other and just being together.
It's, yeah, being instilled in you. Yeah. Yes. And I also in my intro mentioned that you are also a teacher. So tell us a little bit about how that started.
Yeah. Last spring, I think, was my first class. I paired with Lily to do a natural dye class, and it was so much fun. I also traveled a little bit. I went to Anchorage and to Cake and did a beginner Ravenstail pouch through Tlingit and Haida, I think that one was. But about 6 months ago, I decided to step away from my state job because I was having to turn down teaching opportunities. And like I said earlier, I've never felt so whole and so complete and just so healed as when I'm able to share something so special. The fact that these things were done by our ancestors and we almost lost them and they were woken back up and we are still able to share this knowledge and happiness and love. And it's been amazing to be a part of.
Wow. That is fantastic that you've been able to transition, right, from a 9 to 5, as it were, to something that fulfills your whole heart.
Yes.
Which now becomes a 5 a.m. to midnight.
I'm busier now than I ever was, but yeah. It's a good busy.
Yeah, we'll get into that. And then also you're helping with research for this project, The History and Future of Yeth-Ku'u. So tell us a little bit about what your work is on this particular project.
Yeah, so I've been reaching out to some of the weavers that have, you know, in the last however many years, 40, 50 years, woven full-size robes. So we're gathering that information. It's been really awesome to connect with these weavers that I wouldn't normally have, you know, have these connections with, people that I've admired or people that have even commented on some of my work, which is surreal still sometimes. So it's been, it's just proving to me that our community really is tight-knit. And being a part of this research has helped just to solidify that. It's just a great place to be. And it's thanks to Lily.
All thanks to Lily. That is so good. So Lily, let's talk about you a little bit. And then I do want to talk about more about specific things about the weaving and then this event that's happening on April 30th. So Lily, we know you in this community as a fantastic weaver. Many people listening might be wearing some of your accoutrements. Accessorizing themselves with Lily Hope earrings and such and all kinds of other available things. You can see Lily at many of the artist markets and all around. But this weaving has sort of become like a life's purpose, it seems like. So how did this start for you? What's the history of you sort of getting into weaving?
Well, my mother was a renowned weaver, Clarissa Rizal. Went by Clarissa Hudson for many years, but she got me into this in 92, 93, 94. 1994, I wove my first pair of leggings, and one of them was very tapered and one was squarish. So if you're going to weave a pair of leggings, just weave them exactly at the same time. So your tension is the same through both of them. I didn't love weaving these raven's tail leggings. I was hormonal and wanted to play with my boyfriends and, you know, teenager life. Let me go hike some mountains and, you know, do some illicit behavior.
So is sort of like the weaving for you at that point was like maybe for other folks, it might be the piano lesson or the violin. You're like, Mom.
Sure. Yes. You know? I was like, oh, not again. She's like, you can't leave until you weave four more rows. And, you know, I loved doing the other parts of it. As Ray was talking about harvesting and cooking bark and dyeing yarns, my mom had me doing all of those things. I am the middle child, so I helped a lot. Like that was how I was useful, or, you know, that's my identity, being a contributing member of the family, is showing up and helping. And it was the only way that I could spend time with my mother. She didn't play games with us. She worked from 5 a.m. to midnight. I worked a 16-hour day. Da, da, da. Anyway, so I helped her a lot. And there wasn't a point in there where I thought that I was going to be a weaver. You know, I was just being the helper. And it wasn't until summer or early spring of 2017, about 3 months after my mother passed away, she was only 60, I was halfway through a Chilkat dancing blanket for the Portland Art Museum. And the Alaska State Council on the Arts reached out to me and said, we have funding to teach endangered art forms. Can you put together a class of this art form that your mother used to teach? And I was like, oh, I think I'm a weaver. And oh, I'm going to step into her shoes. Yes, she willed me 100 and something pairs of shoes that only fit me, don't fit other relations in the family. And I stepped into her shoes and have been teaching pretty much nonstop since spring of 2017.
Wow. That's amazing.
So I guess I'm a weaver. And I wake up, I mean, I do wake up every morning knowing that this is my life's work. Like that is such a gift to know that, like, I don't have to do something else. I just need to continue what was left in my care.
That is amazing that it started like when you were much younger.
14. We won't do the math. You can do the math. Yeah. Go ahead, y'all. Do the math.
No, we don't need to do the math.
30 years ago.
But it's amazing because you've been doing all of that. And at the same time, I know you're a mother of five children.
Plus a bonus kid lately.
Yeah. Six kids. That is your day really is 5 a.m., maybe even earlier, till late at night. Mm-hmm. And you're managing all of those children. What ages are all of the kids at this point?
The youngest is 6 and the oldest is 17.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Are any of them sort of learning the craft of mother?
Hilariously, the middle one, who is Eleanor Weaver Hope, she has been my biggest supporter. She's like, let me wind something. Let me pack something. What are you doing? Are you stirring a dye pot? I want to do it.
Oh, that's so nice. Mm-hmm.
We also had Lewis weaving a keychain in a class that I taught last year in school. So that was kind of fun to get to teach.
And he didn't even tell me about it. Ray had to tell me about it and was like, hey, did you know that your Lewis is a pretty decent weaver? And then he shows me like a couple weeks later. He's like, look what I made at school.
No,
like,
problem,
what?
Mom.
Yeah, no big deal. I was like, dude, can you come over and like sit next to me? And he's like, I'm busy. I got my Fortnite going.
That's so amazing. And let's talk about this a little bit, because I think this is an interesting thing. I know some people, you've done it where you've been in public. I've seen you at the museum with, you know, your pieces out and working. And I think that and you've mentioned this before on the show, but I think one of the things that people don't understand is how long it actually takes to make one of these robes. Mm-hmm. And I know that the child robes obviously is less material, so it takes a little less time, mm-hmm. but we're still talking about many, many hours. So can you tell us about the process of weaving and the amount of care and length of time it takes to make one of these robes?
I'm not very good at timing myself. I'm trying to be better at that. But even just prepping material is a process, depending on what you're making. As mentioned before, Raven's Tail Warp does not have cedar bark in it, but it still has to be spun together. So it's roving that's being spun together either by hand, like thigh spinning, or by a machine. And the only difference with that is a different twist of the warp itself. But even that takes hours, depending on the size of the project. And then you have the yarn that you either have to buy dyed or dye yourself. So it's a lot of hours to even prep before you start your weaving itself.
Wow.
Like 100 to 200 hours for a Raven's Tail adult size robe. And in Chilkat, you can quadruple that and spend 300-600 hours processing things. And we're using merino wool, not mountain goat wool as historically used, because you can add another 500 or 600 hours of pulling sticks and fur, like sticks and debris out of mountain goat hair, and then turning it into roving and then spinning it with your cedar bark that you cooked for 3 days to get the sap out of. So, you know, when you look at these textiles, you're not looking at, oh, that's a year of work in the weaving. You're looking at an extra 2 months of prep before you even start a stitch.
Wow. And that's for one.
So somebody asked me that recently. They were like, oh, your work was in the Smithsonian Renwick Gallery. That's so cool. Why were there only 3 weavings? Like, why did you only have 3 textiles? I was like, I've only been doing this since 2009. So give me another 40 years and I'll have 40 pieces for you or something. I mean, I let my kids get older so I can actually weave from 5 a.m. to midnight. That would be wow. Who's going to cook my breakfast, lunch, and dinner? I need a chef. I need a chef and a chauffeur and a housekeeper and a nanny.
Wouldn't that be nice for all of us?
Yes, baby.
I've always said that even an assistant needs an assistant.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's definitely true. Life just sometimes gets in the way, and that is a thing, right? That it gets to that, all that stuff. I am in the studio. This is Juno Afternoon. We're talking with Lily Hope and Ray Mills. We're talking about an event that's happening on April 30th, Tuesday, April 30th, and it's called The History and Future of Yaeth Kuwu, Raven's Tail Weaving. It's going to be happening at Centennial Hall. It's a couple of part event on the day. There's going to be from 11 to 3, there'll be an open to the public free weavers gathering. And then in the evening, there will be a multimedia presentation with seeing a bunch of child robes being danced for the very first time from over 20 weavers who are coming from across the country, who've been weaving across the country. And there may even be some surprises in store. And of course, for tickets, you can go to thejahc.org, J-A-H-C.org. And for more information or to see more about this, go to www.lilyhope.com and you can find out and see some pictures there, which is kind of cool. So what are some of the things that you have discovered about weaving, whether it's Chilkat or Raven's Tale, that has surprised you?
For me, every time I am weaving one of our, they're called compact twine patterns in Raven's Tale. So that's if you're looking at a robe or any sort of weaving, if you see black and white or, you know, that color, a pop of color in there, those black and white pattern areas that are creating these beautiful, you know, zigzags, different shapes, the geometry and math is what I have really fallen in love with Raven's Tale. And I think it's because, well, my father was a math teacher. I have it in my blood. But I also just find it so fascinating that our ancestors created these patterns that can be stacked on top of each other or mirrored or so many different things, ways to adapt them to the size of the weaving. And every time I'm weaving, all our ancestors especially is the one that does it. And you're going one direction, you're zigging, and then you go back to zag. And that perfect point that it creates is magic. So the next time you're looking at a Raven's Tale robe, you'll see it's usually in the top or bottom border of a Raven's Tale, a full-size robe. But you'll see a black and white pattern going, you know, kind of back and forth in that area. So be sure to look for that little zigzag that I'm referring to, and you'll see it really is magic.
What about you, Lily? What surprises you?
The meditation. I think the meditation surprises me every time. I don't get to weave alone often, which is a gift and not. I love weaving with people. I love teaching and getting people excited about it. And when they get the twining and how to hold their fingers just right and they get the tension just right, I love those moments. But when I get like 2 or 3 or 4 hours of quiet in my studio and no one is knocking on the door, maybe it's earlier in the morning or later in the afternoon, and there's this like breath happening and my fingers just fly, there's something about like weaving in that universal consciousness space that is otherworldly. I think that's where I keep going back to it with, oh, I really love weaving by myself sometimes. What? Just for a memory of where we were and where we are now and where we could be going.
Absolutely. And that brings me to that question, which is, this event is called The History and Future Of. So we're going to learn a lot about the history, and we've talked a lot about that today. Mm-hmm. What's the future? What is your hope for the future?
My hope for the future is that we continue to pull our ancestral patterns from the past and continue to be inspired by our natural world and the things that are happening to us and around us now. We continue to grab each other by the elbow and walk arm in arm, continue making beautiful things.
And many more weavers.
Yes, please.
And that is what's so wonderful about you both, is that you are teaching new weavers. Mm-hmm. And the one project that you're continuing to do, which I want to mention, is the Weaving Our Pride. That is still happening at Zach Gordon Youth Center. It happens, is it once or twice a week?
Wednesday through Friday, 3:30 to 6:30 p.m.
And those pieces are going to be displayed?
They become the permanent collection at Zach Gordon Youth Center to be worn and used by youth only, for Native events, non-Native events, coming out parties, naming ceremonies, celebration, graduations, all the significant moments in a youth's life.
That's amazing. And that's just going to be ongoing. And at some point, will those be on display at Zach Gordon so that people would be able to come by and see those? Or will there be like a dancing ceremony for those at some point?
We're going to dance the first one, the Chilcat version, on June 5 this summer, 2024. And the second one, we're aiming for like December, early winter, January of 25 to be done. So they take a lot of hours.
Yes.
Which we are remembering, even with mentor artists, and especially with mentor artists working with youth, that we pause to support the youth through the process. So, you know, if we can sit in our little closet and weave it all alone, that's one thing. But having support or having, you know, mentoring people through it is another level of like, we want to do this and we want all of your stitches to stay in this work. Wow. So you can come back in 20 years and say, I made that when I was 12.
Yeah,
right there.
Be able to point at it and be like, that was part of what I learned when I was younger. Mm-hmm. That is so cool. And so what can a listener, what can I do? What can people do in terms of supporting this work? Whether they maybe want to learn how to weave, that's one thing, obviously, that people could do. But if that isn't what they want to do, but what could they do?
You can visit us during the day on April 30th between 11 and 3 and learn more about it and touch all the pretty things. Ask us questions. Bring your students to that. You can donate to our live streaming fund through the Juno Community Foundation, junocommunityfoundation.org or
junocf.org, yes. I believe.
Thank you for that. And search Yeskuwu or Ravenstail Weaving. It's one of their events happening. You can buy a ticket to the event in the evening and come and witness this firsthand and have the hair on your arms be raised and walk away with a little bit of gratitude for this work in your lives. You could buy a kit at www.lilyhope.com and support living artists continuing to carry the work forward and learn a bit more yourself and appreciate how challenging this is. So laborious. So laborious.
But so worth it when we get to things like this event. And mm-hmm. So I just want to give these details mm-hmm. one more time. It's Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. It's an historic event that will be taking place here on Tlingit Ani. It's called The History and Future of Yeskuwu, and it's Ravenstail Weaving. It will be happening at Centennial Hall. And the first thing that will be happening, as Willie just mentioned, was that there's a weavers gathering from 11 to 3 on that day at Centennial Hall. It's free and open to the public. And then it will be followed by a really cool ticketed event that evening. And it's going to be a multimedia presentation where we'll be hearing about the history of Ravenstail. We'll be seeing sort of the dancing of these robes for the very first time that maybe some will be finished that afternoon mm-hmm. with the fringe and all that we've been talking about. And these have been made from over 20 weavers all around the country. And these are the child size Ravenstail robes. And what a fantastic event. And I really want to thank you both so much for coming in today, Gunnath Cheesh, for telling us all about this and all of your amazing work. I know you mentioned your mother, Clarissa Rizal, and you mentioned Dolores Churchill, the very famous weavers. And it's so amazing to see the next generation and then now the next generation, you know, continuing this tradition. So really, Gunnath Cheesh. And Lily, I know this doesn't happen without the help of so many people. Do you want to tell us about the sponsors for this event?
Sure. We'd like to give a shout out to our generous sponsors, Gold Belt Incorporated, Sea Alaska Corporation, Sustainable Arts Foundation, Juno Community Foundation, Ushkindenda'at Lily Hope Weaver Studio, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, KTOO.
Yes, I guess full disclosure, KTOO is a media sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Wonderful. Is there anything else that we needed to say or want to say before we end?
Yes. All of those robes that you will witness dancing for the first time on Tuesday night will then be installed on little kittikins at the Juno Douglas City Museum opening on Friday night, May 3rd, 4:30 to 7:30, first Friday. And come see us then and see them on their little mannequins. Kittikins.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, get your tickets for this event on April 30th. You can get them at JAE. jahc.org, or you can find out more information about the event and probably a link to the tickets too. So you could go read about it first and then hit the button to go get a ticket at www. Make sure you put the www in there. lilyhope.com. That's lilyhope.com. Lily Hope, Ray Mills, Gwyneth Cheesh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was weavers and teachers Lily Hope and Ray Mills in a recent conversation here in Studio 2K. Up next, Clark Handcrafted offers handmade solid wood furniture and toys and will be featured this Friday at Kindred Post. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Travis Clark Morris is a recent Juno resident who has a background as an actor and carpenter. Travis specializes in crafting solid wood furniture for contemporary living spaces and is infused with a touch of old-world charm. His work shows off the natural beauty of wood grain and uses traditional joining techniques. And this first Friday, his solid wood furniture and toys will be featured at Kindred Post, 145 South Franklin Street, from 4:30 to 7 p.m. And Travis joins me now in studio. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa'iti, how's it going?
It's going well, Boston. Thank you for having me in.
Of course. So we know each other because I met you recently when we did the War of the Worlds here at KTOO, put on by Juno Ghostlight Theater. And we were both in that.
Yeah.
That was really fun. And I knew you as an actor then, you and your partner, Valerie, who was also in that production. And you've done a couple other plays around town. So people have seen you on stage. Mostly, I think you've worked with Theater Alaska.
Theater Alaska and then Perseverance a few years ago.
Yeah, that's right. You've been, how long have you been in Juno?
Let's see, living permanently the last 2 years.
Okay.
But I've been coming back and forth since I graduated from the New School, so about since 2013. And we would come up and spend a few months here and there, usually in the summer, or maybe come up in the winter and do some cross-country skiing.
Oh, wow. But, so it's been about 10 years your relationship with Juno has been.
I've been falling in love with it ever since.
And then what brought you, was it all of those visits that said, hey, we should move there?
You know, I had been falling in love with it. And since my partner was born and raised here, I think it's always kind of been an option for a home. I think it always will be a home. Largely it was the pandemic that kind of disrupted things, and it got us thinking about, well, if the world is altered, where do we want to spend so much of our time? And the mountains and the water here, the community here, the artistic community, it was just such a draw. So we're giving it a try.
That's great. Well, we're glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
So your background, you know, it's funny I mentioned the intro, actor and carpenter. Of course, famously, Harrison Ford was also a carpenter.
Right, right.
And was doing those things. So how did you get into sort of carpentry? Where did that stem?
Yeah. Well, I was born and raised into a family business. And that business, we made rainbow pinwheels. My parents called it Celebration Fun Flowers.
Okay.
And so I was putting together cross members and dowels as early as I could hold a hammer. And I grew up around tools, and that was always kind of a passion to make things with my hands. But it wasn't until university where I I studied theater and philosophy, and for a job, I got hired on at the scenery shop. So I started building the sets that I would later act on, and it turned out that I had a knack for it. And I liked to figure out how things worked, and I liked to make beautiful things, and I just kind of continued to raise in the ranks at the shop there, making specialty things, working late hours, and it just brought me joy.
So you're sort of it's in your blood a little bit, right? Because your parents were kind of doing things with you, crafty things.
Yeah, I think making things for
making
sure.
Making things, yeah.
And the handcrafted, the homemade, I think, is definitely something in my blood.
Yeah.
I use the term old world skills, or that the notion of slowing things down. Mm. I think that it's one of the other reasons why I like to be a storyteller. These things that take us back to a different time, things that we make with our hands, or stories that we weave with our words. We change the atmosphere. These things I'm drawn to.
You're the next generation Nick Offerman.
If only.
Because he also does a lot of woodcrafting and all of those manly things that he does in his studio that he talks about.
Yeah.
But is also a very good actor, right?
He is a wonderful actor. And I've actually listened to a lot of his interviews, and he likes to joke around that he has that image of the manly person, but he's just a goofy... he needs as much love as the rest of us, and he's got all of the complexities that all of us do. But he definitely has that persona that people give him.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious about that. Like, because there's such a connection to that, is there something about the woodworking that relates then to the work you do as an artist? Like, how do you find things in, because you're talking about sort of the working on something with your hands, or the silence of that, like the moment to moment that you have to be in with the wood is sort of similar to what your work is as an artist.
Yeah, I think one informs the other. They both inform each other, rather. The time that it takes to make a piece of furniture. And granted, I started doing scenery work, and scenery work is largely broad strokes, getting things up fast, and it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. You rely on the light and the distance for a Broadway piece, right? And if they're not looking at the actors and they're looking at the scenery, there's something wrong with the play. But when I started working on furniture, things that are to be in the home, to be used every day, I was lucky enough to learn from somebody that was making beautiful pieces out of hardwood and using these joinery techniques these are pieces that are meant to last a lifetime, passed down, generation to generation. And when I started learning these techniques, it reminded me a lot of the work that an actor goes through. The time that it takes, all of the kind of invisible work that you do to prepare, it's very meditative. There's a lot of knowledge that goes behind these different joinery techniques about the directionality of the grain, or how much moisture gets into the wood over time and how it moves, the type of join that you're going to use for a particular kind of piece to bear a certain amount of weight. There's just so many choices. There's problem solving in and out. And I think in many ways that relates a lot to the kind of acting work that we do.
Yeah, I mean, so that training, you said you had a mentor. You're talking about having a mentor who's sort of teaching you some of these what you call joining techniques. And I know there's some pictures of some of your furniture on your website, clarkhandcrafted.com. You can kind of see the artistry at work there in terms of is it when you're connecting like one piece, like the leg to the base of the chair kind of thing?
Yeah, so there's so many different ways that you can bring wood together. And largely when I'm saying joinery, I'm talking about either the laminating of two pieces, two boards next to each other to make like a solid tabletop. But then, for instance, to do to put the leg on the table or the leg in the stool, there are different ways to achieve that. You can use fasteners, so you could use a screw or something like that. Or what I'm doing with a lot of the stools that I'm making, I'm using mortise and tenon joinery. So you have different ways that you can do that. You can go square, you can go round. People like to get fancy and do all kinds of different techniques for that. But largely that is a hole cut into one of the faces of the grain, and then the other piece has a properly fitting piece that locks right into it. So for the stools, I've got a hole drilled, and then the leg will come all the way through, and you'll see the end grain on the top of the stool. And then that has a wedge that spreads it out, keeps it in place over time, and it allows the wood to move over time as moisture continues to get in and out. Even after it's oiled, a wooden furniture piece is still kind of alive. That wood will move and expand as time goes on. So it's made to allow for that to happen so that it can last that long amount of time.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, they say, like, you know, they don't make things like they used to, but this is really sort of the old process of making sure that these are the pieces that your grandchildren will then maybe have, because you're going to be handing these things down because they last so long.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Yeah, that is the hope. And I know you work with walnut and white oak and cherry, and you have certain items in Alaska yellow cedar and Western red cedar. And that's what I was going to ask is, where how do you source the wood? Where does the wood come from?
Well, sometimes this is something that I've gotten a little flack for. I tend to carry things with me. I like collect pieces that when I'm working at a certain shop or when I'm visiting someplace, if I find a particularly beautiful piece, I'll bring it home. So I'm often carrying things with me thinking, oh, in the future I'll make something out of this. Now finally I am. But largely I'm trying to get everything in town or to use local businesses to bring it up. So in Juneau, we don't have walnut trees or cherry that are being milled down. So all of that is coming from the Pacific Northwest up into places like Valley Lumber and Don Able. But some of the Alaskan yellow cedar, there are mills that are in Southeast Alaska that source to these local businesses. And I find it really fun to try and make something in town from trees that are also sourced from the forests that we're looking at.
That's great.
Because yellow cedar is such a special wood, and it has a lot of ties to the native community here. Now, I'm not making anything that is in that tradition, but to work with that wood is really an honor, and it smells exquisite.
It does.
It really does.
It really does. So your event is this Friday. It's first Friday from 4:30 to 7 p.m. at Kindred Post. And what will we be expecting on Friday?
So this is going to be a learning process for me too. So I'm going to be in the back corner of Kindred Post. I've got, I think, about 7 furniture pieces. And right after this interview, I'm headed right back to the shop to try and finish everything up so I can be as ready as I can. And I'm going to be pumping out as many of these little kids' toys as I can before we're going to be there. But I'm going to have some tools, some side tables, some of the smaller pieces that I've been making, because it is a little tough to bring a bookshelf in for a few-hour event. But I've got a bench that I made for a good friend that will be on loan to show something of a little bit of a larger piece. But some of the smaller items that you can imagine having in the corner of your home, a stool, a bed, or a bedside table, something like that. And then I am designing new things all the time.
That is so cool. Well, of course, you can see more pictures and also get more information from the Kindred Post Facebook at facebook.com/hellokindred. And of course, you can see more of Travis's work at clarkhandcrafted.com. It's really a pleasure to see somebody making awesome furniture, and this is your first Friday event, first showing of your work. So
it is.
I'm sure you're going to have a lot of people coming out and checking that out. And thanks so much for coming on the show today and telling us a little bit about it.
Well, thank you, Boston.
Yeah, Gwyneth Cheesh. It's Friday. It's the first Friday at Kindred Post from 4:30 to 7. It's Travis Clark Morris and Clark Handcrafted. It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you.
As we gear up for the Alaska Folk Festival, let's take a listen to one of last year's in-studio performances from Ellery, Ryan, and Kieran, musicians from Whitehorse. And I heard that Ellery and Ryan are back this year in all kinds of configurations, and you can check the schedule for their names at the akfolkfest.org. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Settle.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a terrific Thursday. On tomorrow's show, interviews with the Juno Skating Club about their spring show, plus the Byrne Thompson Writers Group reading this Saturday, and a look at the upcoming solar eclipse with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO. Juno 104.3 and KAUK, Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.